I'm a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 179. 179. Okay, so I know what you're thinking. Maybe you're not thinking this, but you're thinking, wait a minute, yesterday was 178, today's 179, but I'm looking at my feed here. I'm looking at my iTunes downloads. I'm looking at the Breadbox Media Podbean page here looking for something to listen to, and I see two missing episodes. Where did 176 and 177 go? We don't know. No, we do know. So I got a little housekeeping slash mea culpa here. So I had my good friend Matt Simmons on the show, and we wanted to do an interview, so we were pre-recording this interview. And I was using my mics that I've used. I've had trouble in the past, but I've had some really nice sounding shows in the past. Those same mics, not really been able to figure it out. And so I talked this over with my producer, and I asked him, hey, what should I do? And he gave me some instructions, which I thought I followed, but evidently I didn't do very well. And when it was all said and done, we did 2 days worth of interview, and just take my word for it, they were amazing interviews. They were spectacular. It was my best work yet. I mean, I would have gotten awards for these interviews. It was amazing. Matt was brilliant. It was amazing. It was a spiritual experience, really. Saints appeared in the room during the interview. We were going to call the Vatican. But unfortunately, the audio is just not usable at all. So mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, both to you, my adoring counter positioners, my loyal listeners. You know, I hate that. But more so to Matt Simmons, who graciously gave me a couple 2.5 hours of his time, and we could not use the audio. Now, I warned him as we were setting up that I've never done this thing that I'm trying to do right now. So there is a distinct possibility that this will not work. And he seemed to be game for the conversation anyway. So anyway, Matt Simmons, founder of Sacred Heart Ministries, former owner of Sacred Heart Tattoo in Lincoln, Nebraska, former Focus missionary, really interesting cat. Really interesting story, really rough background, went through a lot growing up. And we really went through a ton of very personal, very beautiful, very spiritual stuff. So I'm definitely going to get Matt back on the show. He comes to Denver pretty often. And I could do a distance interview with him, but I like having Matt in person. Plus, I want an excuse to hang out with Matt. I love Matt. So we'll get Matt Simmons back on the show, and I apologize if you guys got a bunch of reruns in a row, because we were trying to sort out this audio, and it turned out it just wasn't usable. We thought it was just going to take some time. Turns out it just wasn't usable, and that's my fault. So speaking of audio, Breadbox Media host and resident gearhead, audio geek Timothy Putnam, host of Outside the Walls, was in town today, and we recorded an interview, which is going to be on his show. And yesterday's show was, you know, him. So that was my interview. So it's not episode 178. So that's why you heard that you missed a couple episodes, but 178 was Timothy Putnam, and it was great. He came into the shop there at the Augustine Institute, and we set him up in the conference room, and he interviewed me. He interviewed Ted Sri, and it was good. We had a great time, and he gave me a ton of help with my audio and tried to get me all set up to do some really cool stuff, but we just didn't quite have the cords we needed and stuff. But he gave me a list. And I want you to know, friend, that I, for the sake of your listening enjoyment, I went and spent a small fortune. I went and spent a small fortune at Guitar Center on the way home. And the reason why the show sounded so good on 178 was because I was on Timothy's rig. And I don't have nearly as nice of a rig is Timothy's. But I do now I am now the proud owner of a couple of Sennheiser. Is that how you say it? Sennheiser. Is that it? Show me the page. Sennheiser. Yeah, Sennheiser. 835 microphones. So I have real bona fide, honest to goodness microphones with nice cords and the whole nine yards. So hopefully I have figured out my woes and we will sound good from now on. I had a blast hanging out with Timothy today. So we had a really good time on his show, talking mostly about Calyx and what I do with coffee houses. So this weekend, I believe it's going to be on. Go listen to Outside the Walls with Timothy Putnam, and you will hear me talking with my friend Timothy. And if you listened to the show last night, you already heard me talking for four segments with Timothy. And it was kind of funny. We got done with I know that Timothy has listened to my show a little bit, but when we got done, I said, that was awesome. And he said, yeah, we didn't stay on topic at all. I'm like, topic? Oh, this is the counter position. we start with a topic, but it's just trying to figure out where the rabbit trails are going to go. So yeah, we park the car someplace. We go into the woods in this particular place, but that's just because we like the character of the rabbit trails in that neck of the woods. It's like, you know, as my friend Zach Candler has said before, the sidebars are the best part. You know, the rabbit trails are where it's at. And this show was built to do that. This show was built to be, even when it's just me doing commentary, it is built to be a little stream of consciousness. It's built to be a little bit kind of representational of what happens with conversation. And when someone is just talking about something where they get distracted, you know, I remember reading, Jean Leclerc's book, The Love of Learning and the Desire for God, I think is it was. And, he talked about how, if you read these monastic commentaries in the Old Testament, I mean, in the medieval period, you read these commentaries, these monastic commentaries, and you'll see, they'll just be going along and the sound of a word will remind them of something. And they'll go off on a tangent for pages and pages and pages. And then they'll come back and they just really take these rabbit trails and they just get there when they get there. And I think that, I don't know. It's kind of it's a little bit, what was it? Someone said today, it was like, it's like Lexio Divina. It is a little bit. It's like, you just see where it goes and you let it, you start with a text, you know, I remember what Lexio Divina was. I was comparing it to the way that we do things with Monsignor Giuzzani the way we do things with text in CL, you know, and, we start with a text, but then what we're wanting to do is let that arc with our life and experience and talk about our experience of reality through this text. And it kind of can, so the text is a place to start and we want to understand what the text says and we want to stick on that, but then we want to let it take us someplace and then kind of enter. We start here, but we take this rabbit trail it's not really a rabbit trail, but we let it enter our lives. And with our lives enter the text and we let them interplay in a way that isn't just a strict exposition of a text or even an idea. And that's not exactly what I do, but it is a little bit what I do. So it was kind of funny to see him go, we didn't stay on topic. I thought we had a great conversation. So that was kind of fun. But then something really interesting happened. We got done with our interview and we recorded that episode of my show. And I went over and I was working the bar again. And we're at the Augustan Institute this week is the first of 2 weeks of intensive classes. So there's people from all over the country, most of which are distance students normally, but they come in and they get to take a class in person for a week. So you get to meet all these people that you or maybe are students, but you don't get to see them maybe once a year or so, twice a year sometimes. And so this woman that I recognized who had kind of an Italian accent, a lovely woman that was just ordering this cappuccino and I was making it and she's very nice. And we're talking and I said, and I mentioned that I do this, but I have this media gig that I do an online radio show. And, she said, oh, well, where do you do that at? And I'm like, oh, I'm Breadbox Media. And she says, oh, really? Me too. I'm like, what? She's like, I'm a host. And it turns out it was Lavinia Spirito, who does Unpacking the Gospel and another show I can't remember the name of here on Breadbox. I never put two and two together. Evidently, she's been in on this game since back when it was part of a terrestrial station. And so it was just a blast. So we managed to take a selfie with me and Lavinia and Timothy. And oh, by the way, we did a little exclusive video content for he and I's, both of our friend of the show pages. So at the end of the month, when I start getting this friend of the show page set up, there'll be some video of me and Timothy Putnam doing an interview. So anyway, it was spectacular to get we randomly ran into another host on Breadbox Media who happened to be a student who was in for class. So that was a good time. So I think tomorrow you're going to get an interview that I'm going to do with Lavinia. And so we're going to talk about all kinds of interesting things. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about, but, cause quite honestly, I don't know much about her. I've made coffee for her and she's on our network. So I'm going to try to listen to some of her shows in between now and then and get a feel for kind of what might be interesting to talk to her about. Anyway, so there we go. When we get back, I got a few things I want to talk about. I got a potpourri segment, kind of different things, and then I'm going to get into a little something more. I want to talk about the Pope a little bit again. We did this yesterday, but I want to talk about the Pope a little bit. So you are listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. Now, here's the thing. It's interesting because I bought these new microphones I was talking about. And I like them. I like the way they sound. This system I'm using, I can actually have my headphones on and I can hear my own voice the way you're going to hear it. And there's no feedback. There's no delay that's messing me up or anything, but I don't like the stand that I bought. I'm not happy with it. It was like picking up noise from the table. And so I'm going to have to buy one of those boomy stands, one of those stands that a real studio mic stand where it like clips and it's like a boom arm. Right. But until then I'm holding the microphone today. And it's a whole different thing. You know how when you read a paper book versus you read a Kindle book, or when you do the things in a different way, they change the way you experience it. And I tell you what, holding this microphone, actually holding a microphone in front of my face, and it's changing the way I experience it. It's changing the way doing the show is different for me in this than it is when I had the headset on. I don't know why. I feel more like I'm an MC or something. Maybe I should just start rapping. No, I feel like I'm like saying, you know, welcome to The Counterposition. And now put your hands together for, I feel like I'm hosting a show. Like, I mean, I am hosting a show, but I feel like I need to be introducing different guests along the way or something. It's just it's a strange, strange feeling. Isn't it weird how just a change in body language can make you feel differently in that way? So there's, this show is going to be called, Ooh, I Have New Audio Toys Show. It sounds funny, but doing this show, so much of this show has been me struggling with figuring out this technology and how to do this in a way that sounds worth something. And I finally got it down when I'm by myself, but this interview thing has been uphill, man. I'm telling you. So I think I finally got this. and I'm using that setup right now to play with. So hopefully it sounds good. If not, shoot me a tweet at counterposition or email me at thecounterposition@gmail.com. So, yeah. So what do I want to talk about? Oh yeah. So this weekend I was sitting on the front porch and it's pretty early in the morning. It was still kind of like cool. It's been super hot here in Denver. I mean, just off the chain, ridiculous hot in Denver. We had a little bit of a respite today. I mean, it was like 100 degrees a couple days. It's going to be 100 degrees tomorrow, I think. So it's just brutal. I was sitting on the porch. I think it was early Sunday morning. Yeah. So it's a Sunday morning. I'm sitting on the front porch, drinking a cup of coffee, just kind of relaxing and gathering my thoughts before I go jump in the shower and start getting ready to go to work. I mean, go to church. And it's just, I cannot escape cell phones. It's just people getting out of their cars, talking on the phone, people walking down the street, talking on the phone, people stopping while their dog goes pee in front of the house, talking on the phone. Just like in the course of one, like maybe a half a cup of coffee, I experienced like 7 cell phones. I'm like, God, you just cannot get away from it. If you go into the world at all, it's these stupid cell phones. And so, I mean, the biggest cell phone that distracts me is my own, right? I mean, but not so much the phone as it is, you know, using it as a little computer to look at things, or, you know, to check Facebook or to send a text or something. But I listened to one side of 7 different conversations in the course of less than a cup of coffee, just sitting on my own front porch. Now, given I live in a walkable neighborhood, there's a lot of people walking, but it just dawned on me as I started watching everyone walking by, almost no one walks the dog. Now, you see people walking that are like walking for the sake of exercise. And they do, in fact, you know, often walk, they have headphones in and they're listening to music. But if someone's just kind of walking the dog or hanging out, they're always on their cell phone. And so I came up with an idea, and I don't know if it'll take place, but I want to propose, and you heard it here first, I don't know, maybe they already do this, but I propose a national cell phone free day. That's right. Just one day where the phone is off and buried in your bag in case you get into an emergency. It's safe. Put it in your glove box. You know, like my dad and his wife, they have a cell phone. They never use it. It's like a burner phone or something with some minutes on it. And it just lives in their glove box in case they break down out there somewhere, you know, on a old country road or something, driving around. So they have a cell phone, but they never use it. Right. Which, on that note, it was Father's Day over the weekend. So I called my old man, and as you may have heard, you listen to the show, my dad and I don't have like the best relationship. So we tend to get in arguments when we talk. And, I'm always kind of a little scared to make the call. I'm really hoping to have a good conversation with my dad. I love my dad. I miss him. I like to talk to him, but you're always kind of in the back of your mind going, is this going to be one of those? Or am I going to end up in a fight? I don't want to end up in a fight with my dad. I just want to have a conversation with the guy that helped make me, you know, and was around when I was a little kid. I want to talk to that guy. I just want to talk to him, you know? So I was a little, you know, but then I called dad and he wasn't home. But here's what was funny. He doesn't have voicemail. So the reason I do not have a cell phone, my dad does not have voicemail. Now, why can I talk about him like this? Because my dad does. I don't even know how to use a computer. He doesn't have a smartphone. He probably doesn't know Breadbox Media exists. If I told him about this show, he would have no idea how to even listen to it. If he did, go listen to it. Dad, if you're listening, I love you. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I'm not sure if I have any other family members that listen. But dad, I'm fairly sure doesn't listen. But dad doesn't have... He doesn't have voicemail. I'm like, how in the world do you not have voicemail in this day and age? And I know he cheats. I know what he does because he will call me back. He has voicemail. It's non-content voicemail. He basically has a caller ID and he sees who called And if somebody calls and he recognizes the number, then he'll call him back. But you can't leave him a message. You can't say, "Hi, Dad. Happy Father's Day. Give me a ring." You can't do that. No voicemail at all. Anyway, so maybe my dad should be like the mascot for National Phone Free Day. I mean, just think about this. One day where we just turn back the clock. It's 1992. Maybe we should have no cell phone, no laptop day. Let's just have 1992 day. Let's have a day where we all just have a book and a journal and our keys and a pen and we just hang out. We could do it on a Saturday. That way, you know, if you walk your dog on National Cell Phone Free Day, then you're just going to be with your dog just hanging out. And maybe if you want to talk to somebody, you're going to say hi to someone that you're walking by. You know, that being said, I'm sitting on the front porch a while ago having a glass of wine when I got home. And this old lady was walking by and she was like, "Good evening. How are you?" And she was just like, it wasn't the normal. Like, I mean, she stopped and, you know, "Hey, old porch sitter, how art thou?" I mean, she just gave me the real honest to goodness salutations on the porch. And it kind of caught me off guard because I'm used to everyone walking past me and they're literally feet from me because our porch goes almost to the sidewalk. So I'm sitting there having a cup of coffee or having a glass of wine and just sitting there reading a book and people just walk by and don't speak to you. They maybe occasionally they look up and smile. This woman just went into full on greetings mode. "Hey, old porch sitter, how art thou?" It was nice. It caught me off guard though. It caught me off guard. So I think National Cell Phone Free Day is something we should do. Let's just for one day. And I know I get it. I do this all the time. I understand you are listening to this probably on your cell phone. So I'm biting the hand that feeds me by criticizing the cell phone. And, you know, I'm not griping that you're using it in your car, using it like the radio, listen to something that someone's talking about. That's fine. It's just, I think that it would be good for one day not to talk on our cell phones. Just don't make a call. Just don't do Facebook. Don't do this. Don't pick up your phone. I'll even say it. Don't even listen to my show that day. Just take one day. I want you to listen to my show. Don't listen to my show on Cell Phone Free Day. I want your cell phone off and in your glove box. I just want to see what would happen. I think that either everyone would go, "Hey, that was kind of nice," or we would just have like mass murder. I mean, people would freak out and just try to kill each other. I'm not sure which. It might be some of both, but hey, so that was way more about National Cell Phone Free Day than I planned on talking about. Real fast before we get to the end of the break, hey, I started a new, so I had a t-shirt campaign on Teespring not too long ago. And some of my friends saw another one of my friends in a picture on Facebook wearing this shirt, said, "Where'd you get the shirt?" And they said that I'd made the shirt, right? And it's just a big shirt, good looking shirt, simple sans serif font, left justified. And it says, "Why is there something rather than nothing?" Now, you know, that's one of my favorite questions. And it's just a big fact, one sentence question manifesto. Why is there something rather than nothing? So I'm going to put a link up to that on the show notes on the Podbean. So if you want one of those shirts that says, "Why is there something rather than nothing?" It gets you into some interesting conversations. I'll put the link up, my Teespring campaign. We're going to build a whole store, but maybe on Threadless. Not sure. Thanks to Dave Hazen. Shout out for telling me about that and hooking me up. So, all right, let's go off to the break. You're listening to The Counter Position. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Been high, we crave a hanging and it's dark.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley here on Breadbox Media. I'm having a hard time getting used to holding this microphone. It's a weird, I'm going to have to get a big old boom arm. I need to have more mobility. I feel like Frank Sinatra. I'm just standing here, you know. I feel like I should start singing Donka Shane or something, you know, like I'm like Wayne Newton in Vegas. Donka Shane. Oh, darling, Donka Shane. Hey, speaking of that song, talk about stream of consciousness. That has played the Ferris Bueller's Day Off at Films at Red Rocks, and I missed it. Dang, I would love to see it. They play these great films at Red Rocks, and they have music before and everything. It's amazing they just did Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So that is a movie I haven't seen in a million years. I would strongly suggest, if you haven't seen that in a while, go watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I mean, how could you not? It's a classic. All right, so speaking of watching things and things that caught my attention while I was watching things, so Apple had WWDC 2016, which is Worldwide Developers Conference. And every year they have the Worldwide Developers Conference, and they announce some things, usually upgrades to software, new tools, changes to the App Store, preview a new OS of some kind, something that affects developers. Sometimes they'll announce products and different things there. And so I didn't really even watch the whole thing. I turned it on, and this was like a day or two after the it was on Monday, and I guess early in the morning on Sunday morning was when the massacre in Orlando happened. And you gotta say something, right? I mean, you know, and I'm sure this hits really close to home because Cook, the CEO of the guy that replaced Steve Jobs, is an out homosexual, and so I'm sure that, you know, LGBT people getting massacred by this Islamic radical, who evidently was gay himself, as best we can tell, but. This obviously hit it home to him. And so I was expecting that they would do something. Sure enough, they did. Now here's what's interesting though. They did a moment of silence, and I'm not against a moment of silence. I think that sometimes that can be a simple, classy way to handle something. So I'm not ripping on Apple, and I'm not ripping on, anyone who's did about, a moment of silence for something. I'm not saying that was something you shouldn't do, but it just dawned on me that the moment of silence is kind of the modern prayer. You know, it is spiritual but not religious. It is meaningful for the individual, but without content. Because if you have any content in the way that a public prayer would have content, if you're going to pray, you have to decide who and under what name to invoke it. And you are separating your, which God are you invoking? And then you are separating yourselves from those who do not, believe in a God, but maybe want to have a moment of meaningfulness too. It's the ultimate egalitarian, individualistic prayer. And in some sense, it really, really is the mode of spiritual engagement of our time. You know, I mean, you could try to just do a snapshot and just like hit a really vague prayer, or in just without addressing it to any particular deity or even to a deity, just kind of an oration, if you will. Or you could try to do some kind of a service in the sense where you have a some form of Christian person come out, and then you have a Jewish person come out, and then you have a Muslim come out, you have a Hindu come out, you have these different people from these different traditions or no tradition at all come out and do a different thing or something. But that takes forever, and it's kind of a big to do, and you're going to offend someone. So it seems like silence. Now, and I, like I said, I'm a big fan of silence, and I think I need to learn silence. I learned over the weekend that I need to learn silence. That's a long story. But I think silence is great and probably one of the most important and underrated aspects of the interior life, and something I really, really need to learn. But when silence is the perfect public response to something in the modern era, because it's a minefield. You're just gonna, by even doing a moment of silence, you're probably offending someone. But if you have any content, if you choose any words whatsoever, you are in some way taking a position, and that's fraught with danger. Like I said, I'm not ripping on Tim Cook. I'm not ripping on Apple. I'm not ripping on anybody, because I've seen organizations and events that I was 100% behind, that I love everybody there, and they've done moments of silence before. And so this isn't about moments of silence per se. It is about the moment of silence a moment of silence is kind of what we're reduced to if we want to have a large scale spiritual moment for the sake of something. We've been reduced to that. There's just not enough. And that's kind of what we see this reflected in our American political world right now, where there's just like this split down the middle. You have all these Trumpites or whatever you want to call them. And we have the Republican or conservative non-Trump side. Then we've got all the old school Clintonites that are just like, it's Hillary's turn. We got to get her in there. We loved Bill. We loved the Clintons. They did, you know, we got to get them in. It's their turn. And then we've got the more radical kind of democratic socialists that are kind of got a little more of a European vision of what we should be doing. And that's the Bernie Sanders crowd, right? The kind of burn it all down and start over kind of crowd. And you have this all, you can't, there's a great example, but you look at the modern religious world, you look at these different things, the modern music world or whatever. Do you look at these different things? There's not enough of a common culture anymore. There's not enough people in any one given place that can agree on enough of something where one could, make an oration that could sum up what would be held in common by all these people. It's just not possible to do anymore, not in the West, unless you're in a very particular environment. If you're in a particular environment, like your church or at a rally, or you're in some place where the organization was gathered to get people of like mind on this kind of thing, then you can get away with it. But you just can't do that anymore. Maybe we've just gotten so fractured. Maybe with so many TV channels and so many different internet sites, there's not enough of a common culture where we're just all starting to disintegrate into each being our own culture and each being our own pope. You know, we're just all just kind of like becoming one. We're just a bunch of binary units. And ultimately there can be no community in that. So I don't know. It just hit me. It hit me, and that's what I was thinking about. Speaking of silence. Oh, I got a little bit of a rant. And I've ranted about this before. But I went to a daily mass, and I'm not going to say where. But it was just like, as I was off, and I went to a daily mass. And it was stark. It was like, everyone, the mass ends, and everyone, and it was kind of everyone under 50, let's say. Now, most people, this particular church at that point, it was people over 60 and people under, say, 40 or under 35, probably, right? And this entire generation that was under 35 went to their knees to pray and kind of make a Thanksgiving. Everyone over 50 stood up and started chatting on the way out the door and talking. And I was just sitting there just going, oh my goodness. It really shows the difference that, I mean, you know, the Gen Xers, my generation, we kind of straddle the difference. I mean, we're super social and we're kind of in our own little tribes and everything. And we like spontaneity and all that, but we also kind of, we like something to be done correctly too. We got, you know, but it's just stark. There wasn't too many of us in that middle. It was either baby boomers or millennials or younger, you know, or millennials or older millennials, you know, people in their early 30s down. And just everyone who was under 50 went to their knees to pray, and everyone over 50 stood up and started talking. And it's just amazing what can happen in a generation or two. Just the difference in what they feel, what they're coming to church for, what makes them feel like they've had something meaningful at church. How do they react to that meaningful thing? Now, I got people griping at me the last time I talked about this. I'm not saying that everyone who's a baby boomer is a hippie that chats after mass. I'm not saying that. I have tons of friends who are in that group who don't act like that. They're not reacting to that reality in that way, right? But this was just kind of stark. It was interesting. I'm just wondering what's on tap with the next generation and what's going to happen when this generation raises some people. I don't know. I'm scared and I have hope at the same time. Can that happen? Well, we'll talk about that after the break. So, all right, you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley, and we will be right back.
Then all the colored glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
Breadbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit breadboxmedia.com.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so last lap, the fourth segment. We're in the home stretch, and what do we want to talk about? So I want to hit. We talked about this a little bit when I was doing an interview with Timothy Putnam, but I want to give my take on it outside of the context of an interview. So Pope Francis said off the cuff, as he does, in response to a question in a public interview, that. Well, the first report we got is that he said that most or a majority of Catholic marriages are invalid. And it's just like, and the internet went nuts. Even some people that I expect not to go nuts went nuts. I mean, everybody freaked out. Now, I really, 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 here's an aside. Here's a little sidebar here. Have we not learned at this point in the game that when our current Pope says something that sounds kind of shocking, that maybe, just maybe, I'm just saying, maybe, we might want to wait a day or two. Let's get the real transcript. Let's find out what he really said in Italian. Let's get a good English translation. Let's find out what the context was. What did he say before that? What did he say after it? Do the examples that he used give us any kind of context of what he was talking about? You know, when will we learn this? And some people that I just didn't expect to freaked out, and I'm not going to name anybody, but it was disheartening. So I'm not even going to, we delved into that. If you want to hear the difference, you know, how can a marriage be invalid? In what different ways? What's natural marriage? What's sacramental marriage? How can that work? We kind of touched on that a little bit in the conversation that I had with Timothy Putnam on episode 178. Go back and listen to that. Timothy Putnam wrote a great article on a Belief Observed over on Patheos. Patheos. I'm not sure how you say that. P-A-T-H-E-O-S, that website, on the Catholic channel over there. And a really great article from someone who's been in the trenches working with married people. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is the expectation that we've developed that the mode of engagement with a pope and is to speak to the elite and to speak to the theologians of the world, to speak to the media and to take all that into account. And the language that one speaks when one does that as pope needs to be the language of academic theology, and it needs to be as exact as possible. And those are presuppositions that we have. Now, we have those presuppositions for a reason, because the last two popes we've had, Pope Benedict XVI and St. John Paul II, were very, very much academic. One, an academic philosopher and theologian, one, an academic theologian. And so they spoke in that language, and they spoke with a certain exactitude, especially Ratzinger. My goodness, Benedict XVI, just, he really lays it out in a super clear academic way. So I don't have a problem with that. Anybody who listens to this show knows that I would crawl over broken glass to hold a cup that JP2 wants to drink a cup of coffee out of. I mean, I adore St. John Paul II. He is a special patron of mine. He is the patron of my apostolate. He is a spiritual friend in a very real way of mine. I adore Karol Wojtyła. And if I won the lottery, I would probably spend the rest of my life studying his thought. Now, when I wasn't studying his thought, I'd be studying Joseph Ratzinger. So Benedict XVI, Joseph Ratzinger, is, as far as I can tell, the single most educated, most cultured man sucking air on the planet right now. That guy is amazing. So I am a giant fan of both of them. But this pope is doing something a little different. And we don't seem to be able to make the switch. We are still in that right versus left, liberal versus conservative kind of mindset. And they're just looking for him to say something. And I just don't get that. That being said, fine. So I want to talk about the way that he speaks and the way... And I talked a little bit about this with Timothy, but I just kind of want to go back over it again. So I was listening to Michal Wallstein doing a talk about the movement Communion and Liberation. And speaking of, I had a bunch of stuff that needed to be done, and I didn't get it done over the weekend. And I had stuff that just had to be done. And I worked too late on writing up a document that needed to be written up by Sunday night. And I missed Father Jose Medina, the guy that I'm constantly quoting on here about that article he wrote in the Boston Pilot right after the SCOTUS decision, and humanity living in a unique and a surprising way. And he was in my town speaking to my community, and I missed it. I pray to God someone recorded it. But anyway, I was listening to Michal Wallstein talking about the movement and about Monsignor Giuzzani and about the religious sense and about his way of engaging the world in a reality, right? And he said that something that I had the same experience of is that the occupational hazard of a professional theologian is to live in a world of concepts. And in his words, to never expect anything to happen. And so he tells the story of, there's a fragment in Cicero that Aristotle, does a dialogue, and we don't have a copy of this anymore, but there's a little piece of it in a Cicero work. And he talks about, and it's kind of like Plato's cave, where there are these guys chained and there's a fire and people pass shapes in front of the fire, and it casts a big shadow on the wall in front of them, and they can't turn around and look at the things. So they think that they mistake that for reality. And, you know, and then if someone would be freed and go up into the light and see the world, they would come back down in the cave, and they would think they're mad. Right. And they would try to kill him and even crucify him, I think Plato says. But this is a little different. He has these people living under the ground in well-lit caverns, and that, and with everything that they could need to be happy. And, you know, but they're, but it's all been made, right? And they've heard by hearsay, someone told them that there are gods in the heavens, right? And then Aristotle talks about how there could be a moment when the chasm of the earth would open up, and these men would come up and out, and they would see the sun, and they'd feel its we'd feel its warmth. It's directly we'd see its light and how it lights up the whole day, and we would see the night sky just picked out with stars, and we would say, "Oh, there must be gods, and this must be the work of gods," right? Well, he used that as an example for the theological life, is that those people under the ground had everything they wanted and they were happy, but everything they'd ever experienced was made. It was an artifact. And he compared that to the academic life in the sense that we can live in a world of concepts. And I think that Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, is a man who does not live through concepts at all. I think he lives in direct, real engagement with the personal real. And he's not content to just be exact about concepts that can then later be applied in these situations by fitting reality into a schema. He thinks that reality comes first. And he believes the truth of the schema, but we have to be able to kind of pull that schema from reality. I remember when I was at Thomas Aquinas College, our freshman year, we got we were reading the insect world of Jean-Henri Fabre, and we had to go out and collect a bunch of bugs, all different kinds of bugs, and then we had to classify them. But the bugs came first, right? The bugs came before the classification. You know, I was very funny with mine. I had the big guys in one big long word, and the whittle guys, and then the hard whittle guys and the soft whittle guys, you know, but that hard outside shell on the hard ones came before the classification of hard versus soft. The bug comes first. Human relationships, human marriage, human striving to be one, the reality of these relationships and all this comes before the schema. It comes before the categories and patterns that we want to shove this into, right? People marry each other before we have the concept of marriage. Right. But actually the Trinity exists in the communio personarum, the communion of persons that is the Trinity exists before marriage. Right. But the people and the commitment and the realities and the relationships come first. And that's what I think the Pope, that's how he speaks. Also, real fast, once again, look at all his examples in that statement. His hermeneutic is the poor. If you want to understand what he's saying, you have to look at the poor, usually in the third world. He's not talking to the rich suburbanites sitting around reading blogs. That's not who he's talking to. He's talking about the slums of Buenos Aires, and we don't like that. We want him to think that we're the center of the world. Oh, goodness. Well, we've come to the end. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork, another account. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.